My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people want to make friends, I'm just trying to make you some money. My job isn't just to entertain, but to educate, teach, put kind of tastes like today into context. Not easy. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. This is a hostage situation. After another not-so-hot day where the Dow advanced 5 points, S&P fell 0.28%, but the NASDAQ plummeted 1.61%. You need to understand that we are now at the mercy of the president, and he's showing no mercy to vast swaths of the stock market.
The House of Pain.
That's how I'm starting to feel about his capricious decision to use tariffs to strong-arm Mexico and his shutting down illegal border crossings last week. Every time President Trump does something that's bad for business, you have to readjust what you're willing to pay for stocks. Think of it as a presidential whim discount. So you have China exposure? Assume the future earnings are going to get put through a buzzsaw. Mexico, same thing. Maybe Europe will be next. Don't get me wrong. During his first 2 years in office, Trump was one of the most pro-business presidents in history. People who watch this show know that I've saluted many of those business moves as good for shareholders, good for you. But lately, the White House has been taking a very different approach, and you home gamers better start recognizing it. For example, the Federal Trade Commission and the Justice Department are run by executive branch appointees, people who take their cue from the Oval Office. So when Justice League said it's about to start a top-to-bottom examination of Alphabet's predatory business practices, along with a possible inquiry into Apple's monopolistic behavior, while the FTC is in the process of doing the same thing against Facebook, well, you got to believe the administration's gotten serious about cracking down on these tech titans, especially since Trump has already attacked Amazon. Those companies used to seem like the crown jewels in the U.S. economy. Now they're being treated more like enemies of the state. You wish they made coal, didn't you? Look, there's a totally legitimate antitrust case against these guys, although it's been a very long time since their government got serious about antitrust law. I suspect Trump wants to crack down on big tech because he views these companies as political opponents. And if that's the case, people are going to pay a lot less for their stocks, which is exactly what we saw today, the markdown. Is it the beginning of the markdown? Not clear. The Justice Department's case against Alphabet could potentially lead to something drastic, even a breakup. But you know what? Oddly, with the stock down so much after this, it might not be a bad thing. If you value Alphabet on the sum of its parts basis, as I saw some recommendations say, it could have 30% more upside. A sad indictment of management's inability to create value. I don't know. Maybe it's just the fact that there's so many investigations pending. I have no idea what Apple did wrong in the eyes of the White House. None at all. But given the trade war with China, Apple does need some special protection, some treatment from the president when it comes to the goods manufactured in the People's Republic. After today, it's hard to believe they're going to get it. In fact, it sounds like the president has had it with Apple for making so many goods in China. It's not my judgment. It's his. Apple people, listen to me. It's his judgment, not mine. I don't feel that way. You got 2 million people making stuff here. 2 million people make stuff in there. You got that Worldwide Developers Company. I loved it. My view doesn't matter, for heaven's sake. As for Facebook, all right, they had it coming. So you got to wonder what happened to the pro-business president. Oh, and don't you dare tell me that he's the same. Don't you dare. To a certain extent, as long as the economy stays strong, Trump probably feels like he can do whatever he wants. He just tweeted a poll this weekend, shows his approval rating of 48%. Not good by historical standards, but still up versus last month. Although just yesterday, CNN had a poll of 43%. No wonder Trump's urging his supporters to boycott CNN's parent company, ATT. Hey, I don't watch CNN, okay? I don't. But there are 273,000 people who work at ATT, okay? That's a good company with a lot of people, and I don't want them thrown out of work. That's not exactly a pro-business move. I'm pro-business. I can tell you that many people on Wall Street are stunned that employment is still in good shape given the trade war with China and the inverted yield curve. Maybe the Labor Department's non-farm payroll number on Friday will be disappointing. The president will feel compelled to be less whimsical. That's kind of a lose-lose scenario, though, when you think about it. Either the economy stays strong and the president goes on being capricious and arbitrary, or the economy gets worse and he becomes more pro-business friendly, but earnings per share numbers have to come down. Thanks. As long as Trump is doing whatever the heck he feels like, we're going to have to pay less for every stock under the sun. That's right, every stock. Because the market craves certainty. If we're living in a world where the president can wake up one morning and slap tariffs on a country that he just negotiated a new trade agreement with, by the way, one that does not have aircraft carriers with planes that are pointed at our country, well, that makes stocks less appealing as an asset class. I also think that it's possible that President Trump has realized something that President Obama discovered when he was running for his second term. Most voters don't own stocks anymore. During Obama's second term, the average stock in the S&P 500 traded at 16 times earnings. 16, which is exactly the same price-earnings market ratio the market is right now. 16. Even though longer-term treasury yields are lower, which should make stocks more attractive. That's down, by the way, from 20 when we thought he was a pro-business president. So if most voters don't own stocks, there's not much reason for Trump to treat the averages like his Nielsen ratings anymore, especially now that some polls have shows him some actual approval rating, enough that he tweets about it. This combination, a president who doesn't seem to care about you as a stockholder, hey, he may love you politically, but doesn't care about you or the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and only cares about employment, well, it's not great for the stock market. It makes you feel like you should put a ton of your money in cash. Now, I don't want to believe that. But when you have the president of the United States attacking all of our trading partners, when you have a two-front trade war with China and Mexico, where you were supposed to bring your business if you were leaving China and you didn't want to, couldn't do it here, well, you got to kind of wonder, don't you? And don't get me started on this big tech crackdown. It's hard to imagine the Obama administration going after FANG like this, although I think the Trump administration would argue that's because they were more ideologically in sync with the Democrats. I understand the House investigating digital companies because they think they have too much power. But I can recall a day not that long ago when people within the Trump Justice Department told me, okay, that we are worldwide prominence and dominance of our tech companies was a proud positive. Oh, see you later. No longer the case. For whatever reason, the president's whims have trumped his pro-business attitude. He's anti-business. And if the Trump administration is going to be less pro-business, investors are going to pay less for them, even for the stocks like Bristol-Myers and everything else under the sun. Regardless of whether or not these companies are currently in the president's crosshairs, and who knows what's in the crosshairs next. If you didn't know any better, you might think that aside from our wonderful fossil fuel companies, of which, by the way, I'm the only person who champions in either part of the media, the fake or the real, every other corporate entity has found its way on the president's enemy list. And it's not like being in his good graces is helping the oil business anyway, given the collapse in the price of crude and how bad FERC is in trying to get through some pipelines that if the president knew about, maybe he'd change things. Put it all together, you can understand why this market's been hammered for the past 5 weeks. If the White House is going to be less business friendly, to say the least, Wall Street will pay less for stocks. End of story. Bottom line, hey, if you're an investor in the stock market, this is a dispiriting development. I do think that stocks can rally from these levels, including large cap tech, because we've gotten oversold. More on that later. But it's telling you the S&P 500 is the same valuation that it had during Obama's second term, even though long-term interest rates are a lot lower than they were in 2013. And Wall Street didn't exactly view Obama as pro-business. Maybe that's good politics, but it's not great for home gamers. It's not great for stock valuations. And judging by how much the president thinks it is arbitrary and capricious select business bashing is paying off with the electorate, who knows how bad it will get for business. Any more declines and the bulls will wax positive, get this, for the last occupant of the Oval Office. Mark in Ohio, Mark.
Jim, United Rentals just didn't fall out of favor with the Wall Street fashion show. It fell off the fashion show runway straight into the buyer's laps.
Right.
Just today, though, they announced lowering their targeted leverage, reaffirmed 2019 guidance. They remain committed to completing their $1.25 billion share repurchase program. Leader in the field, I've added a wide scale. My basis is 127 with the stock trading around 114. My question is this. This has been perhaps the worst year for flooding in U.S. history.
Right.
How can URI not be flooded with revenue and profits?
Well, I think the problem is that there's a belief that perhaps the economy in our country is slowing down. Certainly the construction economy. And that's been the reason why URI is going down. It's a very fine company. You got to ride it through this cycle, and then I think you'll do better. But right now, the business cycle seems to be turning down and taking URI with it. Let's go to Will in Ohio. Will.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Kramer.
Of course.
I wanted to know with the tariffs disrupting the auto industry, Hondo Motor, ticker symbol Chimsey, should I buy more with its dividend?
No, the president doesn't like foreign motor companies, and the president has pretty much decided that if he doesn't like it, he's going to send the stock down. So Honda, I don't know. When does he go after the Japanese? I don't know, a couple minutes. Let me check Twitter. Denise in Minnesota, please. Denise.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
Say, I'm wondering if the 6% dividend for Kraft Heinz is safe, and if it's...
No, it's not safe. They already cut it once. When you've cut a dividend once,
sell.
You cut it as much as you'd like. All right, the president's moves aren't positive for business. Hey, listen, was there anyone who championed these business moves more than I did? Do you think I didn't get opprobrium about that? You think I didn't come out here and be brave every night? Well, you know, cut my legs off. All right, just my legs. So what? I find it dispiriting, though. Obviously, the market does, too. I'll make money tonight. After a tough few weeks for the averages, you know what? Hey, let's think about Wingstop. Did they do anything wrong? Not that I can think of. And with news that VF Corp has narrowed its focus to three flagship brands, how should you approach a stock even though it has China? There's China! I'm giving you my take. And it's the number one player in the cash management industry with no China. Could it be the number one player for your cash in your portfolio? Hey, cash is king. I'm focusing on what to head for bricks. I wish I were being facetious. Why don't you stay with Cramer?
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com. Adventurous diners want a food that makes them sweat. But can this buffalo-fueled stock satisfy investor cravings? With a generous dash of digital and a growing dollop of delivery, will Wingstop's corporate recipe fry up spicy returns?
In a hostile market like this one, and can we at least admit it has become hostile, we're always on the hunt for stocks that have shown that they can defy the negativity and actually rally. I'm talking about stocks like Wingstop, the wings and beer chain that's up more than 20% year to date. This thing made a new all-time high a week and a half ago, and it's currently down less than a dollar from those levels. Don't you wish you had one like this? What's driving this trade? When Wingstop reported about a month ago, the company delivered a solid top and bottom line beat, phenomenal same-store sales growth, plus 7.1%, more than double what the analysts were looking for. Even better, management's got a bunch of initiatives going that should keep boosting their numbers, like their delivery partnership with DoorDash and their plan to eventually digitize every transaction. Plus, in the conference call, they talked about the company growing to 6 times its current size, which is pretty spectacular for a chain that's already has more than 1,200 locations. Don't forget, international. So let's take a closer look with Charlie Morrison, the chairman and CEO of Wingstop, get a better read on how his company's thriving in this difficult environment. Mr. Morrison, welcome back to Mad Money. Good to see you, Charlie.
Good to see you.
Charlie, you know, when we first saw you, the stock was at 25. And you expressed a level of confidence. I said, no way, can't do. It's all come true, but it's what turns out that it was really that you've been in business for 25 years, not the small time that we've met each other.
That's exactly right. We're celebrating our 25th anniversary this summer with new products, 25 unique flavors that people are going to learn a lot about over the course of the summer months. And we're just getting started. 25 years behind us, a long way to go.
Well, this number, talking about the 6 times, that's because you're really nowhere international. And yet I think this one travels fabulously internationally.
I think, obviously the entire product line is very portable. We've identified that already in the 9 countries that we serve outside the U.S. It's obviously been portable in the U.S. We operate in over 43 states. We have a ton of white space for growth. We expect that the U.S. and domestic footprints can be about equal size when we're done.
Well, I thought it was interesting you're talking about being top 10.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, one thing it tells me you can do that, you have tremendous transparency. I know you're in town for a conference, but industry-leading track record, I know this is difficult for my cameraman, industry-leading track record of same-store sales growth, you're beating Domino's, Starbucks, Burger King, Taco Bell, KFC. I mean, you're way ahead of everybody. How is that possible?
Well, we're in a brand where we believe we're in a market all by ourselves. We really don't have a true competitor. And if you look at those brands on the page, the ones that tend to succeed the most are the ones that take an active position to connect with consumers, deliver a product that's unique, and fortify a space around them. And a brand that has the portability we just talked about to be able to continue to grow.
Well, let me ask you, I'm seeing my old friend Sally Smith later this week at Buffalo Wild Wings. They must have given you a run for the money. They're now private.
They're a different brand, though.
Okay.
We're not a bar. Our restaurants are about 1,750 square feet on average. Costs a little less than $400,000 right. to invest in. Do an average unit volume of over $1.1 million. It's a very efficient carry out and now delivery focused concept that we believe creates efficiencies that some of the big box players just can't compete with.
How did you select DoorDash? And just give you a sense, we've been to see Grubhub. They've mm-hmm. got some pretty good artificial intelligence. They're kind of saying, well, the DoorDash is you don't get the restaurant doesn't get the information they need. Is this a partnership that can make it so you have good artificial intelligence, find out what people are thinking?
We believe it's a fantastic partnership with DoorDash. What they focus on is making merchants successful. As the merchant, that's exactly what we want. And they take care of the logistics. In our partnership, we've made sure that we are always working together to ensure that no matter how you access Wingstop, whether it be carryout or walk-in or through delivery, you're going to get the same great experience, and we believe they're best positioned to provide that.
Okay, so tell me about, you keep talking about digitizing. What does that really mean? Isn't everything digital?
Everything can be digital at the end of the day. We still take a lot of phone orders. A lot of people still walk in.
Oh, so like Domino's has done.
Exactly. So every time somebody accesses us, we want the opportunity to digitize that transaction. Why? Because a digital transaction tends to have almost a $5 higher average ticket, more profitable for our franchisees, which means more better return on investment, more new restaurants
to grow
with.
Why do you think that is, that it's so much more lucrative?
I think people spend more time with the menu. And they get to know the menu, they add a couple items onto that, and they're not as intimidated by the phone call and the rush that they see at the front counter.
You guys have had very good success, now that you're so big, in TV advertising. Is that the way to go, or should we be doing some on internet?
Well, we've been a socially active brand
right.
as it relates to social media for many years. We've become large enough and have scaled to national advertising.
That's what it takes.
Our franchisees generously added 1% to the advertising spend, so they now spend 4% to a national fund. That has been redeployed into fantastic new media, new creative, which is really helping drive that same 7.1% comp that you saw in the first quarter.
Now, you did talk about, and you've talked about very honestly, labor costs are an issue.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do?
Well, in our brand, we're pretty well insulated. We have a very small roster already. Okay. So and in that small footprint, it doesn't take a lot of people to operate a Wingstop. So I don't know that you'll necessarily see us doing anything to remove the number of people in a restaurant. But we do believe through digital technologies and further digitization of our business, we can create efficiencies that create capacity that help us to grow, which will take pressure off the labor line.
Yeah, we have this thing Beyond Meat. It's going crazy. Now, today was the first day it was down. I mean, are we going to see like artificial chicken? And are you developing? Is that what people want?
I don't think there's a market out there for an artificial chicken wing right now, Jim. I think we're going to stick to what we do well. Wing sides and fries and making it just the way we do today.
What's the demographic in terms of what's the age? What age group don't like Wingstop?
We haven't found one yet that doesn't. I find everybody loves wings. And that's a big piece to our advertising is the opportunity to expand the brand and give permission to everybody to enjoy our great product.
The reason I mention this is because there's someone who owns some restaurants. People in this new generation, I'm not just millennials, but X, they like to be at home, Charlie. And that's something you've really tapped into.
We have. And through delivery and carry out, providing access to unique, distinctive flavors, that's what young people want today.
And
they want accessibility.
But last question, it's what people want today is this company. Company that returns a lot of capital. You do that too.
We do. We do. We've returned fantastic returns for our shareholders since we've been public. Over 250% return to our shareholders and continuing to grow.
Well, this has been the winner in the category. We talk a lot about Wendy's I like, McDonald's I like, but it's Charlie Morrison, Wingstop Chairman CEO, that's done the best. Happy 25 years.
Thank you very much.
Man Money's back after the break.
Coming up, for over a century, this company has kept cash safe. But is your portfolio a smart place to keep the stock? Cramer dons his armor and sits down with the CEO of Brinks when Mad Money returns.
Timing is everything in this business. Every now and then, a great company will do something you've been looking for ages, but it happens at the wrong time. And now nobody's interested. And that's VF Corp in a nutshell. I'm a big fan of this apparel maker. You know them as Vans, Timberland, North Face. And I spent a lot of time telling you about how VF will really come to its home once it spins off its ailing jeans business as Contour Brands. I still think this is a very smart move. Vans has become one of the best growth properties in the apparel industry. And while Timberland and North Face are both solid, a leaner, meaner VF Corp is a great idea. but they finally spun off Contour Brands earlier this month. It trades under the symbol KTB. And no one cared because the timing stinks. The problem, both the oddly spelled Contour, K-O-N-T-O-O-R, and VF have a bunch of Chinese exposure. And in this trade war-racked market, investors want nothing to do with China. That's why both VF Corp and Contour have been hammered here. Plus, it doesn't help that we're now worried about retail slowing down. Yet, with a few notable exceptions like Williams-Sonoma, Target, and the dollar stores, retail is going out of style on the Wall Street fashion show, and sometimes that's all that matters when you're picking stocks. So let's go over what's happening here, because VF Corp is really a textbook case of a very well-run company that's making really good decisions, but still isn't worth buying right yet. Well, I think there's a level where it will be worth picking at the moment, it's just too risky. First, I got to admit that my timing with VF Corp myself, it's been bad. I recommended this stock last September because their Vans brand was exploding in popularity, and I still think it's a great multi-year story. However, September was a terrible time to recommend anything, let alone an apparel play, as the Fed quickly slammed on the brakes with its aggressively hawkish commentary in October, and the White House stepped up the trade war rhetoric at the same time, as I said at the top of the show. VF Corp stock then got poleaxed during the fourth quarter. I mean, really hideous. But if you bought it near its December lows in the 60s, well, now you got some terrific gains with the stock trading at 82 and change. What happened? Simple. The company reported some phenomenal numbers in January, just a fabulous beat and raise quarter with extremely bullish commentary. Strongest quarter, by the way, in the last 2 years, according to CEO Steve Rendle, who's very good. Thanks to the continued strength of Vans, now the number three global sports lifestyle brand, resurgent North Face, VF Corp seemed to be in great shape. Then the stock had another nice run in April after VF Corp officially filed its registration statement for that jeans spinoff I've been talking about, which would be called Contour Brands. Suddenly, I started hearing very smart analysts like Aaron Murphy over Piper Jaffray breaking out the sum of the parts thesis for VF Corp, SOTP they call it on Wall Street. Inventories were lean, the sluggish denim business was about to be offloaded, and the latest quarter had been spectacular. Plus, Vans did very well in Piper Jaffray's rigorous annual teen survey that I look forward to when I see. It's now the number two preferred footwear brand among teens. Teens going from 14% to 20%. It's number two among teen girls, number three with teen boys, and number one with rich teen girls. Teenagers with money are a coveted demographic. It's about Gen Z songs Firefest. Still a must-watch expose of an entire generation. But then VF Corp reported last week, the day before the Contour spinoff, and it feels like the current environment's starting to weigh on them. Sure, the company delivered a 2-cent earnings beat off a 58-cent basis, inline revenue, 11% organic growth when you exclude the denim biz. However, their full-year guidance was either tepid or conservative, depending on whether you believe that they'll be able to beat these numbers. Meet the new VF Corp, apparently growing more slowly than the old VF Corp that I've been recommending. And there are some real problems here. Remember my checklist the other night? The first thing every portfolio manager looks for when they evaluate a stock in this market is China exposure. If you've got business in the People's Republic or your stuff is made in China, your stock is persona non grata. If you source from China, no thank you. On the latest conference call, VF Corp quantified their Chinese exposure. CEO Steve Rendle explained that, and I quote, while current events have the potential to disrupt our business and our consumers around the globe, to date, the impact on our business has been minimal, end quote. Still, Rendle continues, quote, post our spinoff of Contour Brands, our total cost of goods sold sourced directly from China to the U.S. is 7%, and we'll continue to implement mitigating actions to dampen the financial impact of incremental tariffs, end quote. Look, 7% isn't terrible, but for this market, it's too high. Now, it's one thing for a dollar store to have that. We cheered when Dollar General had 6%, but VF Corp makes higher-end products, and it really should have moved its sourcing elsewhere by now, if it could have done so without disruption. And we know the truth. It's much harder to say, it's much easier to say they should have moved than it is to move. The real problem, while Asia Pacific makes up 11% of VF Corp sales, China itself has been a huge source of growth for them, up 25% in the latest quarter, and the Chinese retail market we all know is slowing. Plus, if the Communist Party decides to retaliate against the United States by boycotting, say, Vans, the estimates will need to come down. Now, maybe that's not a huge risk, but in this environment, nobody wants to take that chance anymore. Given the president's latest actions with Mexico, slapping the tariffs on them out of nowhere, basically force Mexico to build a wall, it's very easy to imagine the trade war with China is going to spiral out of control. It's what keeps me up at night. You know, people like to use that phrase. When you combine the conservative guidance with the possibility of Chinese weakness, the full picture isn't great. I hope VF Corp just slow ball in an uncertain environment. Maybe this is all about management practice and UPOD, under promise and over deliver. But hope cannot be part of the equation. If the forecast turns out to be accurate, well, I would consider the results disappointing. Don't get me wrong. in my heart of hearts, I really do like the new VF Corp. I think they absolutely did the right thing spinning off Contour. I adore the Vans growth story. Now that they've removed the anchor of debt, and VF Corp has a much more attractive portfolio of brands. Their best properties, Vans, North Face, Timberland, now matter a lot more than they used to. But we already knew that. It's why I recommended this stock in September. Right here, right now, VF Corp has new challenges that have nothing to do with their jeans business. In a potentially slowing economy worldwide, where there are a lot of reasons to be worried about the consumer, you should think twice about buying an apparel stock, as we know from what happened last week when PVH reported. The fact that VF Corp relies on China for a decent chunk of its growth is also going to make a lot of people nervous for good reason. Finally, at the end of the day, the stock is far from cheap. If we use the high end of management's full-year guidance, VF Corp's trading at more than 24 times earnings. Too expensive. Even using the more ambitious consensus numbers for 2021, it sells for 21 times earnings. Now, it's not nosebleed, right? We know that those are the Cloud Kings, which got taken apart today, but it isn't a bargain either. The bottom line, VF Corp was doing everything right, and sometimes doing everything right is not enough. This is a tough moment where I have a hard time recommending anything. As you know, not bullish here. I have a lot of money for my trust, let alone an apparel company with China exposure, no matter how limited, especially after that very well-run PVH gave you such a disappointing outlook last week. Manny Chirico was right here on the show saying it. I like the VF Corp spun off its slow growth denim business. I love Vans, although the latest growth forecasts were a little subpar. Still, at some point, I absolutely think you should own this one, but not yet. I bet this will become a much more compelling story at the end of the summer as we head into the back-to-school season. So please put VF Corp on your shopping list, but be ready to buy it at lower levels. For now, though, you know there is no need whatsoever to be a hero. Sid in Michigan, Sid.
Hey, Professor Kramer.
Hey, what's up?
Thanks for taking my call.
Okay.
With what's happening in the retail market these days, I was wondering what you think about Under Armour, UA.
Okay, we remember we did speak to... I'm a buyer. We spoke to Kevin Plank. It is re-energized. It's got great management. There's a lot of good things at work there. It's been left behind, and I think that it is a... Buy, buy, buy! I need to go to Paul in Illinois. Paul!
Hey, Jim. I want to give you a big thank you and a big Georgetown Hoya booyah.
Fantastic. Hoya?
Georgetown?
Hoya Saxa. Hoya Saxa, my friend.
I have Hoya Saxa. I was lucky enough last week to watch my son Matthew graduate with his Master's of Fine Arts from Georgetown.
Okay.
And you're the reason he chose to pursue a degree in finance.
Thank you very much. I've been speaking to a lot of younger people and watching this show. I feel great about that. I was filled up with this fellow, Ben, over the weekend. He's a young fellow working at Yext, and we were just doing nothing but talking about the market and these interviews we do with CEOs. I felt pretty great. So how can I help you?
My question is, with Macy's having a PE of only 6 and a book value of over $20, should I be looking at Macy's to invest in?
Okay, this is a very hard one because it is a 7% yielder. They've done a lot. Jeff Gennett has done a lot to fix the balance sheet. But, this market likes growth, and it doesn't have the growth that the market likes. Costco, the dollar stores, Williams-Sonoma, they have the growth. And I know that's not what people want. They want a 7% yielder that's got a lot of growth. Macy's does not have that right now. Very, very tough to own that stock. Target is a lot easier to own. I prefer that. At some point, I think you should consider owning VF Corp, by the way, and that's VFC now. But right now, I am having a hard time recommending an apparel company with China exposure, especially after last week with Manny Chirico and with PVH. Now, much more mad money yet. Is Brinks on the brink of a true turnaround? 160-year-old company. Stock has had a wild ride over the past year, but what lies ahead for the company? I got the CEO. Then it's something I've been following for more than 30 years, and it's rarely steered to be wrong, and it's positive. I'll tell you what the S&P Oscillator is really telling you to do. And all your calls, rapid fire, touches of the lightning round. So stay with Kramer.
Tomorrow, kick off the trading day with Squawk on the Street. Live from Post 9 at the NYSE.
Very exciting show from two winners.
See you right back here tomorrow.
Can't wait for
you. I mean, obviously, you'll be on Mad, but I won't see you there. I can't either.
It all starts at 9 a.m. Eastern.
Everything's been happening lately. Some stocks have rallied while others, well, let's say, they've pretty much traded sideways. Look at the Brinks company, BCO, one we've liked very long. It's a major player in the cash management space. You've probably seen their armored cars, right? Brinks has been a remarkable long-term performer. 3 years ago, it was a $28 stock. Now it's a $78 stock. But last August, Brinks acquired one of its main rivals. You've seen their trucks too, Dunbar. And then it immediately got clobbered, sinking to $59 during the market-wide markdown in December. As soon as 2019 rolled around, the stock came roaring back, rallying to $86 right after the company reported in late April. But then immediately gave back those gains the next day. Since then, it's been stuck in the high 70s range, which is still pretty good compared to the averages, though. Could the stock be ready to resume its climb? Let's check in with Doug Pertz. He's the president and CEO of the Brinks Company. Learn more about how his company's doing, where it's headed. Mr. Pertz, welcome back to Mad Money.
Great,
good
Jim.
To see you, Doug. Have a seat.
You as well.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right, first, we see their trucks everywhere. I was stuck behind one today because I was parking in a curious area where you guys always pull up. How is Dunbar doing, and why shouldn't Dunbar be named Brinks?
You know, Jim, that's a great question on both fronts.
Okay.
And what's even better is last time we were together, when I was here,
yeah,
that was the day we announced the Dunbar acquisition.
I know, so I figured, let's tell us how good it is.
Great time to talk about that. So we are going to be renaming Dunbar trucks
You
Brinks,
are, because you're
be
in business for 160 years.
Yeah,
I like the name
that's,
Brinks.
That's the right way to be transitioning, right. But the combination of the two businesses is going great. The expected synergies that we had laid out of 45 million over the course of 2.5+ years is right on track, and I think you'll see some great things coming forward as we continue to roll it out, not only in terms of for our investors, but also for our customers.
Well, talk about this, because I know you've got this underserved retailer group, and who's left to be to be served?
Well, you know, we think there's a whole nother range of customers out there that aren't using our services, aren't using the services of the CIT business or our industry. They're just risking it themselves, or they're not doing anything about it. It's kind of interesting, I think, Jim, if you take a look at this, most every retailer, and there are about 3.8 million locations, retail locations, that is, there's not that many retailers, but retail locations in the U.S. And our industry, our combined industry, which includes us, probably serves less than 10% of those. And so there's a huge opportunity to continue to provide a better holistic ecosystem service for those customers. But it has to be a better service.
Okay, I think a lot of people feel that the cash economy's gone away. Every time I read you guys, 5%. I mean, you're talking about 5% growth for you.
Yes.
30% of the businesses are still transacted in cash.
There's obviously, and that's just the U.S. number.
Right. Overseas, so what you said
on
is
a global 80. Basis, it's closer to 80, and it depends on
but
which
what
economy.
But what I mean, plastic is everywhere.
And I think what's important is kind of what has the history been.
Okay.
So over the last 3 years, from 2.5 years, we've grown at higher than 5% organic growth,
right.
And that's after the negative impact of a foreign exchange currency on our translational currencies. So you know, it clearly is not just about what's out there and what the cash in circulation numbers are, but it also is fact. That's what we're growing at.
Well, Doug, you know, there's a pervasive gloom that's kind of set in, and we're seeing it in the averages. I don't think many people have as good a handle on retail as you do. I mean, are things as bad as the market says they are?
So I certainly don't think so. Certainly that we're seeing the change of in some of the impact associated with, you know, the Amazons of the world.
Right,
but there's still a very, very large retail industry, population,
right.
And that's continuing to be very strong.
And how about the PayPals of the world? Have they blunted your growth? You've got big business in Argentina, Mexico. They're a pretty worldwide company.
We still have great business there, and as we were saying earlier, the cash usage in those countries continues to grow even stronger than it is in the U.S. And on a global basis, it's 70-80%
of
that growth.
I don't want to be too stupid, but during the during the Weimar period, there was so much cash around the head of wheelbarrows. You're in Argentina.
Yeah.
Is there something to be said about the sheer volume of Argentinian money that they need just to be able to go anywhere?
It certainly is great. And, you know, we operate in every one of our countries on a local basis.
Right.
And so we provide services on a local basis. And it's great to see more cash being needed to be transported in those
markets. So the offset, obviously, is the currency, but you can handle the currency.
We can handle it. And it's just a translational issue.
Right.
It's not a transactional. It's not the cost of you know, trade doesn't matter to that. Higher taxes doesn't matter to that. That's not the cost of services. Our business on a local basis are all based on the cost of labor and the local local costs there. So all that matters is the FX translational issue when you translate that back into U.S. dollars.
Well, perfect. Now, you've got a relationship, since we've seen you, with Canopy Growth, the cannabis company. Now, it is in Canada because it's you're worried about the everyone's worried about federal.
Yes.
But how is that going? Is that a booming industry or not?
It is. It's a booming industry. You know, on a global basis, I think cannabis is going to be a booming industry. It's probably $160 billion on a global basis of Canada is out in the forefront.
$160 billion.
Now, wait a minute. I think the key piece there, there's probably only about 10% of that that's legal. All right, so that means, but that means there's a huge opportunity and a demand out there. That's what it means.
That's, you know, a lot of people feel this thing is overblown. I agree with you. I think it's gigantic as it goes legal.
Well, so what that's Canada, what Canada has done when they made it recreational legal in October of last year, they were almost a first mover, if you will, in moving forward with just what they're doing. And we are working with the largest player up there, Canopy, to provide both their transportation and their cash management services. And we think we're well positioned to.
We at Acreage, which is their partner in the United States, come on here last week, and Acreage was saying that there's banking legislation that could be very positive that I think would be very positive for Brinks, too.
Well, again, I think we need to restate what you said earlier. It is, on a federal level, it is illegal here in the United States, and we do not participate in the business in the United States.
Well, that said, talk about underserved. Everyone knows those are cash operations.
Well, I know, and they should be served, and for safety and regulatory and other reasons, there is some good legislation that's being put forth called the SAFE Act and a couple others like that that would suggest that what they'll do is not change the federal law, but make those states that have made it legal on a state basis to not make it a federal penalty, and then that will open it up for federally chartered banks as well as us to be able to help serve. And I think that's the beautiful opportunity.
Well, there's a lot of good secular trends going your way. That's Doug Pearce, the Brinks Company's president and CEO. Lots of good, if you want to learn about it, I think there's this fantastic first quarter presentation from April that'll explain a lot to you that we unfortunately didn't get to cover because there's so much that's exciting here. We have Money's back after the break. It is time! It's over the light! And then the light round is over. Are you ready, Ski Daddy? Time for the light round. Let's start with Michael in Utah. Michael!
Hey, Jim. How's it going? Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
Hey, I wanted to get your thoughts on WEN.
Wendy's is one of my absolute favorites. Hey, by the way, I have to tell you, that spicy barbecue chicken, you don't need to put the cheese on it. It is excellent. Had it last night in Long Island. Let's go to Mike in Florida. Mike!
Hey, Jim, thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
How do you think Zoetis will do in this environment?
Well, how is it doing already? It hit another all-time high today. The humanization of pets and the problem with swine flu. It doesn't get better for... It doesn't get worse for the animals, but it doesn't get better for Zoetis. Jack in Texas. Jack!
Hello, Dr. Kramer. Greetings from the People's Republic of Austin.
I hear you on that. What's up?
I have a stock that's been recommended to me by several people, including my mother-in-law.
Okay.
And I'm having a little trouble finding out about it. I know it resells solar panels, and I'm a little worried about the Chinese tariffs.
Okay.
The name of the stock is Enphase.
Well, it stocks up a lot. I think you're right to worry. I would not touch the thing. It's had a very big run. Let's go to Mike in Michigan. Mike!
Hey, Kramer. How's it going?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Good, man. I just have a quick question about McKesson. What do you think?
I saw the stock up a couple, and I thought it was a good opportunity, too.
Sell.
We don't like the middlemen anymore. They tend to get cut out. Howard in New Jersey. Howard.
Hi, Jim. Booyah.
Booyah, Howard.
Jim, what's your take on MBEV?
It's weird when the kombucha stuff and my kids are like, whoa, that stuff is tough on the intestines. I know, we're going to take a pass on that. I like PepsiCo. I'm old-fashioned. How about Brian in Texas? Brian!
Hi, Jim. It's getting hot here. In 6 weeks, it'll be murder.
Yeah?
Okay. Last time we talked, everybody loved Exelon symbol, EXC.
Yes.
Then came an inline report, and today the analyst is still in love, but the charts
are god-awful. Should I move into
some of the indexes? I do prefer Dominion. I do prefer Con Ed. I think they do a better job. My number one favorite remains AEP. Okay, let's go to Russ in Michigan. Russ!
Booyah, Kramer.
Booyah.
I love your show so much, I DVR all episodes so I don't ever miss any.
Holy cow, thank you for the compliment. You know I'm a little nervous about this market. Go ahead.
Well, I am too, but I've got a company that I think is probably maybe a safe haven here, okay, if there is such a thing. I have a company that I first learned about on your show. Last quarter, their revenues were up 79% quarter over quarter, the most recent quarterly results. Most, if not all, their lab tests are covered by insurance.
Yes.
They have zero exposure to China, zero exposure to tariffs, and they have essentially no competition, which is approved to under the FDA. It's Exact Sciences.
Okay. Exact Sciences, you're absolutely right. And I don't even think that President Trump is, he's anti-colon cancer like everybody else. I like that song. And that, ladies and gentlemen, of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade.
What is the case for buying stocks right here after these kind of shocking couple of weeks? Simple. If you look at the S&P's proprietary oscillator, the one that measures when we've gotten overbought or oversold, we're in classic oversold territory, and that means we're due for a bounce. Yep, this weekend, the oscillator I follow registered a little south of negative 5. I've been paying for this indicator for more than 30 years, and it's really steered me wrong. When the oscillator goes below negative 5, as it was on Sunday, you want to be a buyer. In fact, the only time I can recall when this strategy failed was right before the Great Recession. Back then, buying stocks because we got normally oversold was a big mistake because we weren't having a garden variety sell-off. We were in a financial crisis with real systemic risk, meaning the whole economy was in jeopardy. Whatever you think of Trump as an anti-business president except for fossil fuels, there's no systematic risk here. Unemployment is at 3.6%, for heaven's sake. So I think we can treat this as a normal decline, just like every other decline in the past 30 years, aside from the financial crisis. And if it's a normal decline, the oscillator says we've gotten oversold, even as it got a little less oversold today, more on that in a second, which means you have to do some buying. Why? Because when the oscillator gets this low, it tells you there's too much pessimism. Just like when it goes above plus 5, it means you got overbought, too much optimism, got to start selling. How seriously should you take this oscillator? Let me put it this way. In my old hedge fund, I always had a gigantic number of short positions. With the oscillator at minus 5, I would cover those shorts and do some pyramid buying, gradually buying a large and large position as the stocks go down. And look, the oscillator hasn't led us astray a single time since Trump was sworn into office. In this period, we've had four instances where it got oversold. A minus 10 reading in February of last year, minus 6 in March, April last year, that's March and April, minus 7 last October, and then minus 12 last December. Every time we ended up bouncing back, this time I think might not be any different, as we are already seeing a turn in the biggest of big cap stocks there. I'm talking about the PepsiCos of the world, the ones that aren't tech. And the oscillator actually rallied a tad after today's session, which is typical bottom behavior and doesn't necessarily eliminate the reason why you can buy. Let's take the oversold chasms of the Trump era one by one. After a consistent rally in 2017, the president shocked us last February, announcing that he was going to slap tariffs on foreign steel and aluminum steel. And aluminum to get the Chinese to stop dumping this stuff all around the world at artificially low prices. We didn't know it at the time, but there was a huge cohort of speculators who were betting against any kind of volatility, and they got wiped out, exacerbating the decline. But it turned out to be a terrific buying opportunity, provided you bought stocks gradually on the way down. Then in March of last year, we got oversold again when China retaliated against Trump's first tariffs. Another great buying opportunity. How about October? All right, a little rougher. When Fed Chief Jay Powell talked about cracking down on inflation with a series of rate hikes, he put the kibosh on the market. In the end, Powell relented, and you made a killing if you bought stocks slowly on the way down, going to December lows, though. If you waited for Powell to change his mind, here's the problem. You missed out on an enormous move, and that's what you always have to worry about. It could be a similar position here. As I said earlier, money managers have begun the process of paying less for stocks because of the arbitrary and capricious nature of the president, who has decided he doesn't need to be pro-business ex-fossil fuels anymore. However, the pattern is to believe that Trump will reverse course with these tariffs on Mexico, and stocks will be able to rebound if he does. That's why I think this market could turn, although you have to buy slowly in stages because it might not turn from lower, it might turn from lower levels, and you have to wait for some tech downgrades before you can take a swing at the most oversold stocks in this market. Bang. Stick with Kramer. I like to say there's always a market somewhere. I promise I'll try to find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer, and I will see you tomorrow.